Welcome, Dr. Felix Bertram. It's a pleasure to have you on.
Thank you, Tim.
For those of you who don't know, Dr. Felix, don't mind if I call you Dr. Felix. You're Felix for me. So Felix is the CEO of two amazing businesses in Switzerland. He is a serial entrepreneur. What I love about Dr. Felix is this ability to firstly have this $100 million clinic, but then also start a Michelin-star restaurant on the side. And the reason I find that so interesting is because he's cracked a problem that I have yet to crack. And I know many of you will struggle and will be hoping to learn from him, which is how do you get your creative ideas out into the world without being the one doing everything? And it's really a question, I think, about leadership and vision. So I would love to hear from you, Dr. Felix, about the many ways that you have managed to get your vision out into the world, how you've got over the various bottlenecks and constraints that I've had to face and many of our listeners will be facing right now, from being a doctor, normal dermatologist, I say normal, fantastic career in its own right, but all the way through to what you're doing today. If that's not too much to cover on one podcast. Let me start asking with, first of all, asking you that core question, which is when did you realize that you weren't going to just be a regular dermatologist? Was there a moment where you kind of had to break out of that paradigm into what you're doing now or towards this direction?
Yes, I would say there was this moment. I was quickly booked out here in Switzerland when I started off 2007. And I had these two choices: to either don't take on new patients and then regulate the business like this, or to find another doctor or employ another doctor or injector or whatever to let the business grow. And remember back then I had been discussions with dermatologists and doctors in my area, and they all do the same. They just stop taking on new patients. And I had the feeling, well, but if there's a demand like this, I should go. And from there on, it was clear I'm an entrepreneur, and I enjoyed the journey very much.
What do you think, looking back, I recently read a book on constraints, which is it's called The Goal. Really, really, you might enjoy it if you haven't read it already, but it's a really interesting idea, which is that whatever you're doing, whatever your business is, there's always just one constraint. If you look back at your career so far, can you think of what the biggest constraint was that you had to overcome in order to get to where you were? Do you think there was one mind shift or strategy shift that really helped you get to the level that you're at?
Oh, that's a very, very good question. The thing I realize a lot today is that people have the feeling it could be easy, which is good if you have that in the beginning. You might think you just can open like 10 clinics and hire injectors and hope they run your business, which will not happen. You might be lucky and have a lucky shot here and there and find the right person, but that will not happen regularly. So I think I really had this moment where I realized I love the journey. There is no summit. There is nothing I want to reach or no particular amount of revenue or whatever. I just enjoy the journey and growing myself into it. And up to today, I'm learning so many things. I would say particularly the last 2 years, I learned the most about scaling and running bigger businesses. I think that's the biggest discovery I made so far, that you have to enjoy the journey because it's my life. I'm literally don't do anything else than just working and brainstorming and reading. Yeah. And it has to be, in my opinion, the idea of passive income and just having a few employees who run the business is not realistic.
That resonates a lot with some of the changes I've experienced recently as well, which is it's something along the, I think when you first start, it's like a means to an end. There's this desperation to, you know, make an income so that you can improve your standard of living, mm-hmm. which obviously is fair enough. And then you may actually not like the job that you've created for yourself. And then you have a desperation to get yourself out of that. And then eventually you reach a stage where you realize that none of the real value that you got was in the stuff you learned along the way. And then you just want to learn more and more.
Yeah.
What I would see, like, you're operating at a different level of complexity. Like it's with the number of people and the number of staff and the number of businesses. But it has just become about trying to figure out all those problems. Like it's the fun of understanding and building. It's something I think I hope as quickly as possible, as many people get to this stage as possible, because it's so much more fun than in the initial stages where it's about survival. Yeah. And I think that's really what the surprising thing is that when you get to a certain level, I think people think it's about the money, and it weirdly stops being about the money quite soon, and it becomes about what the potential is, what you can build and what you can discover.
I think it's a little bit like sports, you know. Once you play, like, let's say basketball or tennis or whatever, on a top level, it's getting fun. You know, it's just, you see most of your endeavors work out, or I don't know if you have real, saw the feedbacks of Lips and Biz in Miami. You know, I worked so damn hard on this and really brainstormed a lot on all these details. What kind of people are we addressing? What is their needs? And how can we structure the day? What is it about to start your business? What are the key needs of nurses? And then seeing something like this really crushing it is so deeply satisfying that you just keep on moving.
So what did you learn from that experience? If we take a little detour, because since everything is about learning, what do you think was the main thing you got from trying to do something like that?
The Lips and Biz event in Miami in particular. My learning is, well, it's always more work than you expect or might see from the outside. Organizing an event for 430 people is really a different level than just having a masterclass or a 50 people event. What I figured out so far is there is a huge demand on business advice out there. There are bunches of highly motivated nurses currently in a contract or in an employed situation who want to start their own business and just literally don't know what are the first steps, how to write a business plan, how to read a financial fact sheet, where do I get money from, how can I set up my marketing strategy. It's a bunch of topics. If you haven't worked on them for yourself or you're not generally interested in them, it's like a, you know, it's like a dense wood and you don't know where to enter. So that's my feedback on that. And I think we created this entire event quite in an entertaining way. And I think that's very, very important, because if you talk to other business owners who have their experience or maybe other entrepreneurs, you can go through these topics in a different way. But if you have like several hundred people, where the most of them just want to start off their business, you have to pack it in pieces and have breaks in between. And we had some work sessions, and it was quite colorful, a lot of music. We had a salsa session, and we worked on goals, on purpose. You know, I think it's super, super important to not just jump into something or listen to these outer voices, these narratives of what you see on Instagram or what others think or what you should do. There is no should. So one of the main or most important parts is first, sharing my experience and show them that I'm vulnerable and I made mistakes and I'm struggling and I have obstacles. And then really, you know, that from Inner Circle, work through what is your purpose? What is your goal? How is your life situation? What is your private goals and your business goals? So I think working with these group of people is slightly different than with, a bunch of already highly successful entrepreneurs, because they're just starting off and there are many, many questions beyond business, which should be answered properly. Mm-hmm.
So one of the things you said there just triggered me, because we obviously spend a lot of time trying to understand the people in our audience. And there's probably one big difference that runs right through the middle of them, which is, do you want to work for someone else or do you want to work for yourself? Yeah. And a lot of people have a little bit of entrepreneurialism, but they don't want the risk. And then you can be more intrapreneurial. I'm sure you have people in your team who do things like that. They come up with ideas and they're trying to shift the business forward, but they don't really want to do it on their own. And then there are the other people who really their whole goal is to eventually stand by themselves in a business. Do you, what do you think the proportions are? From Lips and Biz, what was the feeling about what most people were aiming towards? Are they trying to succeed more in an employed environment or with starting their own practices?
Well, it's just my feeling, you know. I haven't had a chance to analyze the survey so far, but my feeling is there's independency is a huge topic. They want to be independent. They want to work independent. but probably quite a big number of them, as you said, don't want to take the risk, don't want to be responsible for everything, but being some kind, you know, I think injectors are, or see themselves as artists, as some kind of independent people. I think there's some kind of need in the genuine idea of being an injector to take your individual independent decisions. So I had this feeling of, that was a big need of the majority, whether that is in a safe environment, right, or being employed with someone. And maybe there's an option to have both, right, being independent and having someone who's helping you with the infrastructure and all the business parts. That could be something cool to brainstorm on.
One of the ideas I came across recently, which I really liked, is this idea that success, another way of measuring success is the degree of autonomy that you have. So the more successful you have, the more autonomy you have. But linked to that is that you can obviously be extremely successful within an organization, but you need a leader who gives you more autonomy, and you need to obviously earn that autonomy of trust, but you also need to need a leader who gives you trust in order that you can be more autonomous. And I'm kind of interested in this with how you've grown your businesses, that you must be striking that balance, because you yourself are not a Michelin star chef, but you've got a Michelin starred restaurant. So there's that ability to empower other people and structure them and then trust them to go and execute that I'm quite interested in. Tell us a little bit about how you might hire staff and then give them that trust so that they go away and execute the plan that you've decided is the vision, essentially.
Which does not always work out, but I separate the Michelin restaurant from the clinic. The Michelin restaurant was an easy one. I met this chef, Kevin. Funnily, it was the architect who built my clinic invited me to a cooking class in the two Michelin star restaurant. I met this chef or sous chef back then. And we became, we had a good contact. We connected on Instagram and we were chatting for 2 or 3 years until COVID hit in. And then he called me one day and said, listen, do you have any ideas what I can do? He was at home because the restaurant was closed. What I can do in future? And I said, I have this idea. I think two things are super important when you scale, in my opinion. One is culture. You have to create some kind of culture in your company. It has to be cool. It has to be cult to work for this guy or for this company. And I'm figuring out how to create this culture, this style, this like Red Bull or Nike. Really, people want to work for this company. And I had this idea of having lunch for my employees, because days are busy, as you know, in clinics, or when you see patients, you see like 20 patients in, is it dermatology or injections, and you don't have this moment of conversation, of calmness. And I also hired a psychoanalyst who watched my clinic for a day, and he said, it's so busy, it's so hectic, that there's this cushion of silence is missing. And so I suggested Kevin to run my lunch employee restaurant. I said, well, you know, I'm a two Michelin star chef, and I'm okay doing lunch for you guys, but I want to earn my own stars and want to celebrate my own successes. And 2 days later, I called him back and said, let's do both. Let's do the lunch and let's do the dining, and you can get your rewards. And I was just lucky that this man is incredible. He has a natural style of leadership. He had these good connections and network. He get on like 5 or 6 other chefs who are all very, very skilled. And to be honest, I have nothing to do with the restaurant. The only thing I'm doing is enjoying and having a chat here and there. So that's easy. What in regards to my clinic, it's a little bit more complex because it's 140 people in the meanwhile. And I learned by mistakes. And I realized without a leadership structure, the risk of crashing certain departments or certain clinics is always very high. Because naturally, if you just hire like 5 people, put them in a clinic and say, okay, go, they have no KPIs, which we might talk later on. KPIs are on breaking your business down into numbers to set goals. They have no structure. They have no leadership. They will leave. And we realized that a good, successful scaling model in our business needs a leadership structure. So we have our own leadership academy with like 6 modules per year. We pick our own leaders, on the meanwhile hire them. You know, the bigger you get, the more interesting people you're able to hire and pay. But most of the leaders we discover in our team and then build them up through this leadership academy, train them how to take on communications with employees, how to lead, how to give structure, how to understand KPIs, how to understand the key factors of the clinic. So yeah, that's great fun and great success.
How would you define the difference between leadership and management?
Well, leadership, you know, management is what I'm mostly doing, and that's a dry business. I'm sitting at my desk and running through numbers and working on strategies. But leadership is, I think 3 key factors are needed. You have to be responsive to your people, the people you lead. You have to give feedback. I think that's super important. And you have to show appreciation. And it sounds easy, but it's quite hard sometimes. And at the same time, being a fair and good, like I would say, my concept of a good leader is the good father, the best version of a father you might imagine. Best version of a father is being clear and guiding on one side, but also being helpful. You know, people always want to be helped, heard, or hacked. So having these both sides in yourself, and I think if that comes together with some kind of charisma, you're probably some kind of a natural born leader. And we try to
I love that helped, heard, or hugged.
Helped, heard, or hugged. Yeah. You can't lead only with this. You also have to give clear guidance and clear structures, and have to give feedback. And I think that's the picture of a perfect leader, in my opinion. Yeah. But you
I love the analogy of the father as well. And it resonates a lot with me. I have 2 sons, and I've learned a huge amount by having to deal with the sort of issues that they throw at me, and just dealing with them in a different way compared with how I might have thought to deal with a member of staff, and then realizing that I should probably bring that to the staff is definitely true.
Exactly.
I'd say it really helps the heard, helped, and hugged. That's really helpful, I think, because a lot of people have this more hard-nosed approach to business, which is that it's about driving and goals and KPIs and all that stuff's really important, but realizing that you're also dealing with a human who wants to be helped, heard, and hugged is really helpful. I've got something from that. I also think something else I've learned along the way is that the stuff that you appreciate people for isn't always the stuff that they value the most, and trying to find out what that is can help you a lot, because we all have a different value framework. I often think of one of my project managers carries a pocket knife, and the first time I saw this might appeal to your audience, a Swiss pocket knife, and I saw that and I was like, wow, that tells me that she's independent and problem solving and all this stuff that I just love, all that kind of stuff. So I've appreciated her about that many times. But there are other that just happens to be something that I value, but there are many other skills that are not the same in the same ballpark that I'm a bit blind to, because the one that may not appeal to someone who's very entrepreneurial, all about new things, is the consistent people, the people who show up day in, day out and do the same thing no matter what. They're doing something different that you also need to appreciate. And that's my own learning, as I have to
absolutely thank you for raising this topic. Appreciation can be super easy, cost no money, but on the other side, it can be super, super hard, because my nature is to do business. I love to jump into the elevator in my office and work, creating new ideas. But I have to force myself, and I do that. I have 2 entrance options in the morning. I can go through the main entrance in the clinic, or I can take a side entrance in the elevator to my office. I force myself to take the main entrance and quickly ask everyone if they have a nice weekend, or if they slept well, everything okay. Just a short smile, just a short hello. And that already, my feeling is that really helps a lot. And if I realize someone has done something good, I haven't seen him. I've just heard the clinic in Zurich has just, reached a XYZ revenue, or has 3 great reviews from patients. Then I set myself in and write a quick email and say, oh, amazing, you have done so well. Just these tiny signs from the CEO, in my feeling, they help so much. You shouldn't underestimate these small, tiny things you can do. They cost you 5 seconds, but they're so, so valuable.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's super valuable. Let's try and relate that to how the typical person who might be listening to this with maybe their first or second employee. And this was a huge moment for me. We delayed it way too long because I was afraid of that step. I remember thinking, you know, then I'm responsible for them, and then I've got this additional burden. And it took, we probably should have done it a year before we did. Miranda and I were working together at that stage. What advice would you give to someone who's at that threshold where they can feel that their time is maxed out because they're doing everything? How would you help them hire, make their first hire, be prepared for that, and make sure they get the right person?
Well, the first question is, what do you want to hire? Do you want to hire another injector, or do you want to hire admin people? Be aware that admin people might help you. You might gain more revenue if you have time left, but they cost salary and usually don't help growing the revenue. So what I did, I hired two or three injectors or doctors before I started hiring admin people. Also here on the recruiting process, I did a lot of mistakes. So what we mostly do, we decide on sympathy within the first 2 minutes, and then the rest of the interview is to subconsciously prove that we are right. We have a clear process of hiring people. So it has to be a cultural fit. It has to, well, you first need all these technical skills. That's clear. Certificates and what's needed. But the two most, at least two key factors, which are the same importance to me, is interpersonal skills in general. Do they have good interpersonal skills? Because we are in the business of relationships. And I think interpersonal skills are so key in the daily work we are creating with our patients. And the second or third is then cultural fit. It has to be a cultural fit to you and your values and your goals and your style. So I think I would clearly check on that. And when we create a job ad, we already touch on our values and cultural visions we have in the company.
Okay. So I'll touch something else we've discussed previously, which is relevant to that. Because I hired a lot of people who I liked for a long time. It was like, as long as I liked them, that was the first thing. But I realized over time that there were some people who were less agreeable, you know, people who are more likely to give you bad news and not pretend everything's okay, who were actually extremely valuable, who I may not have had the same lovely warm feeling in the interview with, but they were providing a really important component of the team, which is someone who doesn't put up with bullshit and pretend that everything's fine. And I started to value those people differently to all the lovely people. And I think if you're hiring clinicians, it's probably more you want that customer-facing element, but there's also other people. Have you had something like that in your business where you see the different personality types solving different problems?
A lot. And sympathy and vibes is, of course, one important part of hiring someone. But I've learned over the years that I really try to focus on what do we need, and will the person do the job? Is that a fit for them? And I have this concept of, I always ask, imagine you go on vacation, how would you start planning it and how would you execute it? And the one who says, I'll go in the internet and I'll check all the hotels and costs and options, that's probably a lion. Lion love to plan and organize. So if I'm searching for someone for, like, say, HR or accountant or finance department, I need someone who's very well organized. So I want a lion. Then you can go on with the one who says, I'm jumping on the plane, going to Fiji. That's a cheetah. Cheetah was action. So if I need someone who's my event manager or in the marketing, I might take a cheetah. Or the fox. The fox has many ideas and another idea and the next day a new idea. So That's amazing, but that's the wrong person for the finance department, but might be perfect in some kind of, I don't know, marketing. So we work very, very clearly with these kind of concepts. We with leading positions, we even do personality tests to really find a good fit between the job and the person, and not only sympathy and vibes. It has to really match in this regards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
was that the answer to your question? Not really.
No, it is. I love this, the image of the fox and the I think I was hiring lots of mirror images of me in some way,
yeah.
which is fine, but there's a limiting factor, which is you're I'm not complete. You need those other personalities.
We have this bias of hiring mini-me's,
yeah.
And that's a risk.
Yeah.
Yeah. And we have forgotten that we have the beer, the line, the cheetah, the fox, and the beer. The beer is the one who would do holidays always with his partner or spouse. So for the beer, relationships are very important. So also these people are probably very, a very good fit in our segment.
Yeah.
Caring about relationships.
Absolutely. So the first thing is to understand your own limitations. And this is what I think business is all about. Like, you're just constantly batting up your own beliefs that aren't quite correct up against reality until the point is driven home. Yeah. So I also what I'm really enjoying getting from this conversation is I'm seeing the different strategic moves that you've made and comparing it with mine and realizing how obvious the mistake was in retrospect. But for me, the first thing we did is I hired admin and business support staff, and I maxed myself out until I was working ridiculous hours.
Yeah.
And I probably got a lot of experience out of that. No regrets. You have to learn on the way. But the first thing you did is you alleviated the clinical. You basically replaced yourself as the first move.
Yeah.
Whereas I made myself more busy as the first move. So this is really, really useful for anyone who wants to actually grow something that's beyond themselves. Is that kind of strategic thinking around what the constraint is. The other thing I love picking up from you is quite often you have two elements at play. You have a passion, something you want to do for the sake of it, but then there's also a nice, cold, strategic reason to do it. So, because I thought you just loved the idea of a Michelin star restaurant, but what you've actually told me is that you had a strategic move, which is you want your whole business to be a more enticing place to work so that you can grow the main business.
Yes.
And you also love food, so it's great.
Exactly. And the third one, the way they prepare the food, you have been there, Tim, as you know. The kitchen, first of all, looks like operating theater, very clean. They work with tweezers and they create these tiny pieces of art. And each of these seven courses is just a tiny piece of art. And to me, another way to visualize what we're doing in our core business, precision, beauty, quality. So the fine dining segment is a very good fit to what we do as injectors, being very precise, creating art, have artistic eye, working with quality products.
So this is something else which I'm learning from you, which is that idea of building brand. Brand is a different thing to sort of product or service. So this is a brand move as well, that you're creating this sensation around the spirit of your company is that idea of small, perfect, beauty, precise. Mm-hmm. It gets encapsulated in the other things you can do. So it's really interesting to see it. So I think the genius comes from this linking between a passion and a strategic move. And mm-hmm. and it's similar with your chef. He had a passion, you had your small move, but you captured his energy by saying, let's take it all the way and make it a whole restaurant rather than something just for my staff. I think that's another thing I'm trying to do with my team as well, but it's a really good idea, which is how do you find the passion in people and capture that energy so that you get much more out of the same time? Because he could have spent exactly the same amount of time making an amazing lunch menu, and instead you got basically international press and renowned for going the extra level, which he wanted to do anyway.
Exactly.
This is amazing strategic thinking, which I'm sure will be of help to many people who either are inside that an organization, because maybe that's the next thing we can talk about, which is for you at the top of an organization like this, what is it that you, because I help many clinicians and often they have battles with their bosses. You know, it's like, I'm in this business, it's a crap business because they won't let me progress, or, you know, they set up an incentive scheme and when I meet that, then they pull the rug from underneath me and now I feel like I need to move on or whatever it is. What do you think clinicians on the other side need to know that you're looking for that would give them the most opportunity to grow within an organization?
Yeah, that's a very good one, Tim, and it's a challenge. To on one side met their expectations, on the other side doing a fair judgment on what they are capable of and what they're willing to invest. But I really try to be in good contact with all the, at least the main injectors and doctors. What I found out, clinicians like to work in a team. So our clinics are quite bigger. We don't have these small clinics with two or three people or injectors in there. It's minimum five. A Lenzburg is like 20 in the meanwhile. That's what I realized, at least in our end of the world. They love to work in teams. They love to share knowledge and wisdom. What I personally do also is to try to develop each and every one. So we offer them, if we see the potential to be one of the future leaders and take part at the Leadership Academy, we pay trainings. We also support them in growing to be a KOL or a trainer. We're just starting off for next year with some great ideas in this regard. So really try to invest a lot of, maybe not personal me in the meanwhile, but we try to invest a lot of time in personal conversations and figure out what is their goals, where they want to either. And some just want to work and just want to see their patients, which is great as well. But I have the feeling that's a big part of retaining these people, really helping them and be honest and correct in all these payment terms, and then going on the journey with them. And we stick to our promises, and that's a big help.
Yeah, I think one of the hardest parts is the trying to align different goals, and it's because you'll have, like, I have people in my business now who have goals that they don't want to work for me forever. Fair enough. They'll want to do something beyond that at some point. Yeah. So I think it's harder with clinicians actually, but with someone who, for example, you know, I have a videographer who wants to make more kind of documentaries, for example. I can harness that potential for a while, but I probably won't be able to harness it forever. If he grows at the right pace, eventually he'll want to go and do something else. So I have this philosophy of like, well, that's fine. Let's make the most of your passion now. Yeah. And then you might leave earlier, but while I've got you, it'll be better for everyone. Yeah. Now, the only problem with clinicians is that they're actually often your competition when they leave. Now, I don't know. That's certainly played out a few times. I don't really feel like it's affected me. I don't know if that's just an idea in my head or if it's real, but it feels like it's different if they end up round the corner from you. So that's one of the harder things. How do you keep people motivated who are ambitious within your team to basically stay for as long as possible and add as much value as possible? Is there it's particularly the top end. I find that one of the trickier things.
It is. And we lost a few who left and did their own clinic. In the meanwhile, I would say we are so professional and so well known and can guarantee each and every top injector that he will earn at least the same he would earn in his own clinic or even more, because we have all this infrastructure, operating theaters, lasers, and we talk about that and we say, listen, you have the same money or even more. You don't have to care about any admin. You have free weekends and leave the clinic after work. You can grow here you can visit the Leadership Academy. You can visit SAI, Swiss Aesthetic Institute, and the masterclasses there. And I have the feeling 90% totally have realized this advantage and realized that doing it on their self is a far higher and more complex struggle than just staying at ski. And as said, the cult, it's they get this lovely lunch, and we have this Oktoberfest, and there's so much going on for them. We have an onboarding, we have a spirit book, we have an own app in the meanwhile. So we really invest in people. I know it's expensive, and I know the profit margin might be a little smaller than other clinics, but currently, at least, we don't have the problem of people leaving, because it's really, it's a place they want to work, especially clinicians and injectors.
Yeah, so sometimes it's helpful to get people who've dabbled and then realized how hard it is, because it is it's a wildly different skill.
Yeah.
Growing a practice from being a practitioner. And I didn't really appreciate that until I was up to my neck in it. You know, you basically have to master multiple different things. It's fun and I enjoy it, but I wasn't doing it out of fun in the beginning. I was doing it out of desperate necessity to try and keep the thing going. And I tried to get a job at one point. I was like, I just want to work for someone else so I can just focus on one thing.
Yeah.
Because I realized for me personally, my attention is, it's painful for me to switch attention all the time. Mm. And I'm currently now trying to structure things so that more and more people are taking care of the stuff that I used to think my attention had to go to, which is, I think, what you've obviously achieved within your business.
No, you're doing well. You're doing amazing, Tim. I think you're doing better than me in regards of work life and time balance.
We can learn from each other. I don't know.
Absolutely, absolutely. We had already good conversations. Christmas last year.
That's great for you to hear. I must really look up to you, and I feel like you conquered many problems that I got stuck at. So that's why it's a pleasure.
The funny thing is, you say you look up to me, and I look up to you. So you know, you have this vision of what I am and what I achieved. And I see other people doing the same. It was, oh gosh, you're so successful. I don't see it. You know, it's for me, because I have been on the journey, it's for me just a very normal thing to be there. And I see all the struggles on the other side, these sleepless nights, this pain in the masseter because I'm so under tension and you know, and how do you name that in bruxism? When I do that at night, and that shows I'm under pressure all the time. And one quick thing on the question of what is if someone wants to leave. What we're now working on is some kind of concept where we could say, okay, you want to do your own clinic, why don't do it together? We take care about the infrastructure. We help you with everything. I give you my business knowledge. And you pay us a fee, or you, I don't know what, you, we license our business. That's something I'm brainstorming on right now, even on a bigger scale outside Switzerland. I think that could be great, because you could deliver all the concepts, marketing concept, even design, interior design. If that's what someone wants, it still can be personal. It still can call the Jenna Miller Clinic or whatever, but it's... all this, she doesn't have to make the mistakes we already did, and we could be like the backbone and help with all the admin and maybe have a software like a platform for injectors, which enables them to run their own business, being independent, but have enough help in the background to handle it. That could be something.
Amazing, one of the things that I've learned and I'm trying to roll out my team is this idea of the people. Basically, people are highly motivated. I actually think all humans are motivated. It's just that some of them are motivated to keep things the same, so they don't look motivated, but they are. They're just trying to keep things the same.
That's the Bob and Ashley. That's again back with the beer and cheater in Miami. At this example of Ashley is something between cheater and fox. Many ideas, wants action all the time. So she wants to move forward. And Bob is the beer and adlied. He wants to be protective. He wants that the daily business is running smoothly, that we all safe. As you said, he's motivated, but you have to find the right job for him. You have to put him in the right place. And his motivation is to keep it like it is. Exactly.
Yeah. And then the thing you can do with the idea that you just expressed is make it clearer for the person who wants that, exactly what steps they need to take, which actually increases your motivation. So one of my favorite quotes from this year has been, the people don't fail, they don't give up their goals for good reasons. I'm going to ruin this quote now, but they don't give up their goals for good reasons. They give up their dream for a path to a lesser goal. Mm-hmm. So, and that's essentially what you would be creating, is a path to a greater goal. Mm-hmm. And when people have the path, they're much more motivated to go and achieve it than even they would think they would. Because, you know, if you said, you know, you can start your own self-landing rocket company to me now, I wouldn't I'm not going to try. I don't. But if you gave me all the instructions and all the steps and all the people and some funding, I'd probably go for it. So there is something about this structuring of information and process that is hugely valuable. I think there are a lot of people who are capable of much more when they have that in the right package.
And that's what I'm thinking of, to share my knowledge and help people with that. Could be very interesting, yeah.
Cool. Or maybe there might be some overlap. We can talk about that some of the time with the thing I'm going to do in the future.
Welcome.
Around that sort
Welcome.
Of thing. It's a different angle on a similar process. But of course, you know how to build the next tier up. So
we will have a chat on that very soon.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about scalability. It's linked to what we talked about already, which is constraint, and how you see maybe using artificial intelligence in your business or in businesses in general. If you think that's something that's going to make a big impact or no impact in the short-term future?
Oh, that's a very, very interesting question. The first thing we implemented already is the mold check. Our mold check is almost done by AI. It's just a nurse observing it, but then there's a machine taking all the pictures and the computer in the background measuring it all and checking it and storing it. In regards of, you know, that might take a few steps in the future. I think all the intellectual work of doctors could be done by AI. So I see, for example, dermatology very clearly that could be done by AI, and then the doctors maybe just a guider or psychological support or helping with decisions. In regards of aesthetic, that's a very interesting topic. I believe very soon we will see like 3D cameras measuring faces and giving you or the customer or patient may choose what they want to look like, and AI will create the optimal version of that and will guide you through the injection process with exact measurements and saying, okay, inject 0.3 mil in this area and or it's exactly at this point. I don't know where it's heading through, but what's your opinion on that, Tim? We're not talking about content.
I think it's inevitable.
Sorry?
I think it's inevitable. I mean, when you were talking there about the exact measurements, I was thinking if the measurements are exact enough, you could even have a robot do it.
Yeah.
So, and then there's no people involved at all, which is really sad in some ways. But then, I don't know, maybe we'll be exploring other planets.
But probably that's a step ahead. I think first intellectual properties will be run by AI. You know what I mean? If they gather all the symptoms and the history
the
of
data,
the patient, and we'll have a proper diagnosis, even much more precise than we doctors do.
Yeah.
Because one computer learns something and shares the knowledge with millions of others, while if you learn something, you can share it with me. In most cases, you probably won't do it because we don't meet and we don't chat and we don't have the time for it. You know what I mean? So the learning capacity of this AI thing and these new version of quantum computers is insane.
Yeah, it is. It's quite hard to get your head around, in fact. I saw something else that might be kind of funny to talk about, which is a kitchen robot. So I don't know if you can buy these little machines that are quite cheap. They're £1,000. But then I found one on Google that's $250,000 that does everything. Now, of course, the reason it's not as good as a Michelin star chef is because it hasn't got the data. So it doesn't know exactly how long to leave each thing. And there's a lot of instinctual stuff, or skills stuff that you have to gather over time, which the machine doesn't have yet. But you can imagine that would, once you have the data, it becomes a matter of the machine executing it. I think it's going to happen to even the most skilled jobs eventually. But it, as you say correctly, it starts with the data. And how do you, because there is a company who's already doing this, because they had a call with me around the 3D face thing. But I got to the point where the issue is about the connection between intervention and result.
Yeah.
So you can scan a face and recommend, increase your chin and make your eyebrows higher. But is there an intervention that you can predict will actually do that to that degree? That's the human element, which I think is where the missing piece is. If you gathered enough patient case studies and you could extract the data from that in loads of detail, which someone will eventually do, that'll be the bit that takes humans out of the equation.
Yeah, absolutely.
and whether we, because it's kind of is kind of sad, but it's probably decades ahead. But at the same point, I think it's inevitable. I don't think there's anything that's going to stand in the way of this wave.
But here's my question to you. What do you think if we draw the big picture? So I believe, for example, in terms of content, there will be a huge amount of content being produced because every shy person in the corner will be able to create great content by AI. And we're heading into this phase of deep fake and people will be able to create videos of you talking things you never said, stuff like this. Would you think that there is a time where people want back to real, to personality, to people who guide them? Maybe this entire thing of being an inspirational person standing on stage like we did in Miami or so, it gets more and more important because people won't be able to figure out what's right and what's wrong? Or do you have a different view of the big picture in future?
That's a really interesting question. I think there'll be certain jobs eventually where you are very disappointed if it's not AI doing it. Yeah. You know, if you call up a call center and you have to speak to a human instead of an AI that's really good, you'll be like, just give me the AI. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to the human journey, the story, I don't think an AI, even if it's the best story, if you know it's not real, I think it loses its meaning.
Yeah.
So I think the ability for humans to connect with each other, that will probably be all that's left eventually. You know, it's the campfire connection with other humans and their experience and how to move in whatever direction you want to that will, I don't think AI will take that, but I might be wrong.
No, that's what I believe as well. So what should we do to get prepared for that? What advice would you give to these people out there? How can they prepare for a phase where personal connection gets more and more, but which is a nice thing, right? We lost a little bit of that. And if all this, what's happening now, gets the shift back to being more keen on people's relationships and guidance, and what is your advice for these people? How can we get prepared for this time?
I don't. It sounds quite idyllic. I described it. You just kind of have to.
I don't know. It's just guessing.
I mean, you are. It's interesting. I've actually never thought of it this way. But I know during lockdown, I really struggled with staying at home. Miranda loved it, even though she's the extrovert. Like, I really need to get out and see people, connect with people. She was doing that as well. But I found just staying at home awful.
Yeah.
And there's an element, I think, in society in general of isolation is a big problem. And so some people are saying that what will happen is computers will solve that problem by you'll have your AI sex robot or whatever, and you won't need a wife, you know. That. But I don't think that's, my instinct is that if you know it's not real, there's some part of you that will crave the authenticity. And so, and the unexpectedness as well, because real people are unexpected. They don't respond as you program them to, and that actually wakes you up. You know, I remember being invigorated in lockdown by coaching my mentees. Like, the hour that I had them with them once a month was the most exciting part of my time. And it's because they were unexpected and would invigorate you in some way. So, I think, I don't know about preparing for it, but it's almost like notice that you need that. I mean, most of our audience get that from your patients. It's really fun interacting with an engaging, unexpected patient, solving their problem and sending them off in a better way than they were when they met you is a fantastic little feedback loop when you're good at it. So they should appreciate that. They should probably buy shares in AI companies, because I often wonder, like, who's going to own everything? Like,
But what are the right companies? That's the big question. It's maybe not the ones
at the moment. It's very hard to know. There'll be a lot that come and go.
Yeah. We'll see. It's exciting exciting and frightening at the same time. It's happening so fast and so quickly. It's weird.
Yeah.
I use AI quite a lot in the meanwhile to write captions. And when I prepare my podcasts, I often use it just to get a guidance so that when I'm talking to an expert in marketing, I'll ask AI to create like 13 good questions, and then I edit them and work on them. But it's very helpful in many regards.
Yeah, We use it as well on our team for quite a few things. You can also program it to do your own stuff. So the thing I got from it actually started with Inner Circle. Your speech on purpose got me thinking more about what my core purpose was, and then I've tried to find different ways to play that out in my life already. And it's essentially around being a transformative guide, so trying to help other people transform. And it started with patients, and now it's progressing into the individuals within my business, and then obviously the whole business will transform with that.
How but do you do I, it?
Sorry?
What is your strategy? What is your concept, though, on empowering your employees and help them grow?
I mean, it's a lot like I've mentioned that I think you've done with your Michelin star chef, which is he had a transformative journey to go on, which was to have his own space that was a Michelin star clinic, and you essentially empowered him to do that. Mm-hmm. So my role, it's the same as what I do with patients. You try and find out what they're really after, because no one wants an injection in their face. They want the result they think it's going to give them. Now, some people are maintenance oriented, which is fine, but there are people who are actually, when you dig deeper, are trying to transform their life in some way. They're trying to get themselves ready for a big leap, a new relationship, a new job, you know, all sorts of things people are motivated by. And I make the goal of my intervention to help them achieve that. But you can do the same with staff as well. Not always, and not everyone wants transformation either, but it's the people who are hungry for something much bigger. If you have a really transformative goal for your business, then you can start to pull those people in that direction.
Yeah.
Now, the heart of it is tricky, which not a lot of people always agree with this, which is everyone even capable of it? And the truth is there's a degree of faith, which is that you have to think, and I do believe most people are much more capable than they think they are. And I have to believe that because I'm one of those people. You know, I'm doing things now that I didn't think I was capable of in the past. So I have to believe that of everyone around me. They're all capable of more. So when you start from that position and you get them to articulate the things they really want, which is hard, and it evolves, because sometimes I would say most people ask for what they expect. They don't ask for what they actually want.
Yeah.
So it's really helpful to constantly dig at people, say, what do you actually want? Not what do you expect? Because once you've harnessed what they want, you have a whole different level of energy and focus that you can then hopefully use in your business to transform your business while they transform. It's scary, though, because you don't have the capability when you start, which is, once again, helps me when I look back. If I think back at where I was, you know, 15 years ago, I didn't have the capability to do half of that. I was terrible at video, of all things. I was really bad at it. So there's still a video on YouTube you can watch and see how bad I was. But knowing that it's possible and that you will develop the capabilities along the way, so long as you're brave, which is what Miranda's an expert on, like how do you get yourself ready to take action when you're not actually ready? Mm-hmm. If you can build that whole cycle into your team, then the theory is, and I've only been doing it for a few months now, but I can see it making a difference now already, that you start to get exponential changes in your business, and everyone's happy and thriving and learning and pulling in the right direction. That's the goal.
But do you think it's easier in this creative settlement you're working in now, with creating videos and podcasts and many other creative things, and I'm sure you have amazing plans ahead, than in the clinic, where the protocol and the daily routine and structures are quite set? So that's what I said earlier. I try to do that in my career, but it's just super difficult because expectations are beyond what we can deliver, and rules are setting already most of the day structure, right?
I think one of the key things is you have the problem with transformation is you have to let go of the old stuff, and so sometimes you don't really want to let go of stuff. But if I give you an example, I have a clinician on my mastery program who recently told me he's invented something. Mm-hmm. And you know, he's training to be an aesthetic clinician, but he's got this device. He hasn't shown it to me yet. I might see it later this week. And he, in order for him to go full into that, if he was working for me, for example, I would have to back him on something that's actually not related to his main job.
Yep.
But I might, if I back him correctly, own a piece of it or get some benefit out of it. So I might get, and if it's a big enough idea, who knows, it might be worth 10 times more than my whole business. So a lot of the transformations come from you actually leaving behind the other thing, mm-hmm. which is why it doesn't work on everyone, because, and you can't, it's hard to sometimes have it all. You have to constantly slot people in behind, although that's the other way of looking at it. There are people who would be desperate to work in your clinic, who for them it is the transformational goal to work in your clinic. And then people who once they're in their clinic have a transformational goal of doing something else. And so if you're a transformational leader, the idea is that you're constantly helping people along that process. And it'll somehow, you will be fine, you know, because you're always leveraging up higher up. It works out. But it is, because I've been coaching my whole team recently and it's exhausting because I've got enough people that my whole week has been full of it. But it is fun, and they're coming out with ideas I wouldn't have come up with, and they're doing projects that I wouldn't have come up with, and their attention is on the right thing. So it is exciting. I have to figure out how to do it in a way that's more so, because at the moment I'm not actually thinking about my transformational goal. I'm thinking about all their transformational goals.
But if you do that, I mean, if you see my journey, it has been a transformation all the time. It has been a clinic or just a practice. And then we took on aesthetics. Then we grew to a clinic. Then we had this lab on. Then we had our own magazine. Then the restaurant. Now the training institute and some future stuff is coming up very soon. And I have the feeling that this dynamic journey I'm taking as an entrepreneur is attracting a lot of people to work with us because they love this. They love to be on the journey with us. Right. Yeah. So it's not only their personal transformation, they want to be part of that transformation. So if you would follow your personal goal, you know, me, for example, I love just watching you and me run on Instagram, growing and succeeding and meeting people in Miami, knowing you. That's cool. So I think it's the same with the relationship to our employees. They love being on this storyboard.
Yeah. So there is a part of me that believes that there's no one who doesn't want to go on a transformation. It's just that they are afraid
That's why they join you. But that's why they maybe join you, because they see you doing it and they want to just sit on your side and breathing that air and maybe can take the similar journey or whatever.
Yeah, that's interesting. Because the reason I like to give people the room to refuse transformation. Like, not everyone has to do it. That's fine. Sure. But at the same time, everyone has already transformed. Like you said, like you're doing it. And the other interesting thing is maybe you can figure out how to do it at an increasing rate. And I guess that's probably what at some point happened to you, which is it started to become bigger ideas. Right. In fact, it has recently with your. Yeah, with the stuff you're doing on Dragon's Den. Is it called Dragon's Den? Shark Tank.
Shark Tank, yeah.
You know, and getting into business on a much sort of higher level, which is really exciting. But that's another transformation for you, right?
Absolutely. Now, I'm looking forward to that chat we're going to have about some future ideas. I would love to share here, but I first want to share it with you.
I know that feeling. My friend who's invented this device also feels kind of afraid of sharing it. But the only reason I don't mind so much is I know how bloody hard it is to shift your strategy and start to try and copy someone else's. And when you do, it's never the same anyway.
But I told it already. It's this idea of a platform where I don't employ all these people, but just licensing. Is that the right word? The SkinMed or SAI brand to others and create.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a great idea.
It's phase of brainstorming, and then people can get everything from this platform, like products, business advice, enable people to go on their journey and can pick what they need in addition without taking too much risk and being in long-term contracts or whatever.
Yeah, I think it's a fantastic idea. And like with everything, what I was going to say next is the challenges in the execution. That's what the real competition, because probably lots of people have similar ideas, but it's the ability to execute. And I used to have this written on my wall at home. I just wrote on top of my blackboard, ideas are shit.
Yeah.
Execution is the game. Because I kept stumbling over brilliant ideas and then not executing them. And so I had to kind of
There's another thing, Tim. When you were in the US, you hear these nurses all talking about these big chains coming now. And I think you would have a great, great advantage if you can do something different. You can offer another way of running your business instead of being employed in a chain. And the good thing is, guys like you and me, we have the credibility. We understand the mindset of nurses and doctors. We understand what they need. We know that we all struggle if investment companies are in the background and trying to just gain more revenue, bigger profits. You know what I mean? So I think that could be some kind of an alternative offer for many, doing their own business and having the support of a bigger company in the background who has the credibility and maybe also the branding and and the knowledge. And well, it's still in the phase of brainstorming and we have to do that.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about it. I love this idea of that success and autonomy are linked. And I think what we're afraid of with the chains is the complete lack of autonomy, that you just become like a McDonald's worker.
Absolutely.
So is there a way of building something that helps people to maintain their autonomy in the face of chains?
Exactly.
That's a cool
I think
problem
that could
solve.
Be a niche, or not even a niche, maybe could be a very good concept.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about that. Yes. That sounds like a good problem to solve, to have independent clinicians.
Cool.
Or at least preserving that autonomy. So you've set me off thinking now instead of
no problem. Secret.
Okay. So what is? I mean, obviously, that we're kind of touching on it. How would you articulate? Well, let's start with a question I quite like, which is: what advice would you give to yourself from 3 to 5 years ago if you were to call Felix from the past and say, "You know what, Felix, I've got a way that I can help you." What would it be from 3 to 5 years ago?
Be even more strategic. I did a few mistakes, and although I knew what's coming, you know, for example, I knew that the numbers of qualified doctors or employees are decreasing. I knew the demographic change will have huge impact. So I definitely would not open up any small clinics in the countryside anymore. I think these bigger clinics like Lenzburg or now Zurich running very well, and this concept of being all together or very close is I think I would focus more on this, and seeing SkinMed more as a brand than just as an employer. I think the branding capacity and power is so strong and opened so many doors and help being talk of the town, and strong branding and more strategic.
Interesting. Yeah, that is something that I got from my trip to you, is the power of brand. And I don't think I'd thought about it in that way until actually feel. You have to feel brand. Like, it's not the same just to see it. It's, as I say, a lot of people think it's the logo, and it really isn't. It's a feeling that you get that makes you want to breathe the air, you know.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that's the future. You have to, also in regards of AI, and when everything gets just, the borders between reality and deep fake will diminish. So I think branding and personality and leaders and inspiration and transformation will be very, very key elements.
Absolutely. So that hints at my next question, which is actually a much harder question, which is, it's, 5 years time, 2027. 2028. So 5 years time is 2028. If you achieve the goals, the things that you've got on your plate now, and maybe even beyond that, your transformational goal for then, what do you think your advice for yourself today would be?
That's not that difficult. That's why I did the purpose speech last year. I'm realizing, I'm now 50 very soon in 2 years, and realizing time is really limited and probably the most valuable asset. So I just want to make sure all I'm doing is as you said, transforming me, is enjoyable, is growing me as a person or as a mind. That's the main goal I have, whatever I do. And it might shift to something totally different. I don't know. But I'm on the journey and I'm searching and I'm open for many things. And I just inhale that and want to make sure that my time is filled out with valuable and delightful and fulfilling stuff.
Mm-hmm.
That's all I
Amazing.
Want.
So I think that's a super great point to end on, because if you think about where you started and I think about how I started and how much of it was driven by, for me anyway, I'm not talking about you at this point, but for me, a lot of it at this early stages was driven by scarcity and desperation to get it moving. And if I'd instead been driven by just openness to learning and experience and seen it all more as a journey that's mainly a game, I probably would have progressed much faster. And there are lots of people listening now who can hopefully take on board that you should try and make this fun. Like, if you're not having fun already, consider everything, even the bad stuff, is just learning. And I think that's what I keep hearing from people who are being very, very successful, is that everything just becomes about a new opportunity to learn something new and understand something differently and then make another move makes ultimately the only output, because you don't take any of the millions with you when you die. The only output is the self-trust and the learning. That's kind of the thing you hold on to.
100% agree. Yeah.
Okay. Well, that is amazing. Thank you so much, Felix. I got so much from that chat. I'm sure you got things to do, so we can free you.
No problem.
Always a pleasure happy. Once again to talk to you.
It's always an inspiration to talk to you, Tim. Thank you so much for having me.